4.5 years after the first American satellite went into orbit, the space program paid a dividend that people could not only cheer, but actually use. You are using it right now, because this program is reaching you through a communication satellite. On this afternoon, 40 years ago, the age of live global telecommunications began when America and Europe suddenly looked at each other for the first time live. The first American face Europe saw on that day belonged to Walter Cronkite.
You might think that television was a blessing to journalism when it first flickered on in the late 1940s, but the fact was it also was a terrible headache. Television meant pictures, motion pictures, and it took money, luck, and time to get those pictures onto the evening news. Time was a particular problem.
Well, now we have some very, very dramatic pictures made by Telenews on recent Atlantic Pact riots up in Iceland. These are scenes of communist demonstrators as they battled police at Parliament Square.
That was how Douglas Edwards set up a typical foreign news story in the early days of the CBS Evening News. You'll notice how Doug tactfully described the riots as recent. This was because he may not have known precisely when they occurred, or if he did, he was embarrassed to say. Such film often came in days after the event. Old news by radio and wire service standards. Film had to be processed, edited, then flown across oceans on prop-driven planes before it could be telecast.
In 1949, the American chief executive broke all precedents and journeyed to the faraway countries of Asia, where the spectacle...
10 years later, film moved by jet, but news also was on the move, farther and farther away. When President Eisenhower toured the Mideast and Central Asia in 1959, we still were tied to old-fashioned newsreel cameras and airplanes to get the film back home. CBS covered his tours in a series we called, with considerable poetic license, Eyewitness to History.
Never before had a president of the United States taken such a goodwill trip, and CBS News White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint went along.
President Eisenhower inaugurated this new...
By the time Bob's eyewitness reports reached CBS viewers 2 or 3 days later, they were indeed history. Then on July 10, 1962, a NASA rocket lifted a small spiked sphere off the pad at Cape Canaveral.
Good evening. I'm Charles Collingwood. Man today took a giant step. That's the promise of today's launching of a Telstar. The communications satellite was launched early this morning, achieving a near-perfect orbit.
Developed by Bell Labs, it was a satellite unlike any we had ever sent up. One that could receive, then retransmit voice and video signals with the speed of light. Every 18-minute pass it took over the Atlantic Ocean became a live communications window between America and Europe.
The satellite will undergo its big test 2 weeks from yesterday on the 23rd. Television viewers here and in Europe will see a special program beamed to the Telstar.
13 days after launch, it was ready to go to work.
I understand now that the French horn, the French antenna, is starting to track the satellite, and it should not be very long before they are in complete auto-track and capable of receiving our signal.
The three American networks became partners with Canada and Eurovision for the first formal exchange of signals. NBC provided facilities at 30 Rockefeller Plaza, where I sat at a desk alongside that network's Chet Huntley, with whom I normally competed for such breaking news stories. Fred Friendly of CBS was one of three producers. As anchor and managing editor of the CBS Evening News for all of 13 weeks by then, I was assigned to open the program.
Are you seeing anything right now on those monitors we noticed a moment ago up above your head?
Yes, we have three monitors actually.
The technology was so new, neither continent had any sure way of knowing exactly what the other was seeing. In the last seconds before link-up, my only contact was with the AT&T ground station in Andover, Maine. Across the Atlantic, ground stations in Plamour-Bideau on France's Brittany coast and Goonhilly Downs, England, waited to complete the link. I stared at the monitors and saw nothing. Despite several run-throughs, I still had qualms that it might all be an electronic goose chase.
Well, now, all we can see, as this is relayed back to us, on those monitors, the two on the left, are square windows of light. Is there something in there we can't see?
I have just received word, Mr. Cronkite, that the French are ready and the program can now start.
Eurovision, we're now putting up our Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor on the left side of our monitor. If you'll please put up your Eiffel Tower in Paris next to it.
Then, slightly ahead of schedule, Telstar rolled over the horizon on its 124th orbit at 18,000 miles per hour.
We're going to wait for your signal. If that's been completed, we'll go on that signal.
There were a few empty seconds, then the reassuring voice of an old friend and great broadcaster, Richard Dimbleby of the BBC.
Hello, Walter Cronkite. Hello, United States. On my television screen here in Brussels, they are both together, it's clear. So go, America, go. Go, America, go.
Good evening, Europe. This is the North American continent live via AT&T Telstar, July 23rd, 1962, 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time in the east. The New York skyline on the Atlantic Ocean. On the west, 3,000 miles away, San Francisco. 12 noon at the Golden Gate Bridge between these two oceans. 180 million Americans have begun another week. We'll visit with some of them in a moment.
It was that rarest of all television moments, the kind that compels viewers to lean forward and stare in a primal wonder and amazement at their screens. The reality of live telecast to Europe seemed so unbelievable, it was as if we had to keep telling ourselves it was happening. The plain facts of electronic life are
that Washington and the Kremlin are now no farther apart than the speed of light, at least technically. That what goes on in the United Nations building in New York can be seen in Belgrade and in Paris and in Bonn. We in television are convinced that the ability to portray immediacy, to realize what's new, what's going on, is the true significance of this new communications bridge. These first 18 minutes will attempt to show you a few of the things that are going on right now on the North American continent. I'm Walter Cronkite.
The first slice of American immediacy Europe saw was baseball as we cut through to a Chicago Cubs telecast in Wrigley Field.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have just been informed that this baseball game is being seen in Europe right now over the Telstar satellite. Let's give all the baseball fans in Europe a big hello from Chicago.
From Chicago, we jump to Washington, Cape Canaveral, Quebec, and Stratford, Ontario. It was all pure muscle flexing, of course. We were creating an event to serve technology. We had no idea that a technology so young might become master of events so quickly, but it did.
We take you now directly to the State Department building in Washington, where the President is answering questions from the world's press corps.
That an accord can be reached. We continue to try to reach one.
As President Kennedy's face rolled over once, then flashed live across the continent, European gold markets were fluctuating wildly amid rumors of an American devaluation. It was pure luck when, just before we cut away, a reporter routinely asked the president about U.S. gold policy.
Would we be able to stop the trade?
We are not going to devalue. There's no possible use in the United States devaluing. Every other currency, in a sense, is tied to the dollar. If we devalued, all other currencies would devalue, and so that those who speculate against the dollar are going to lose. The United States will not devalue its dollar.
Kennedy's words were aimed straight at Paris and London and hit their targets dead center. Almost immediately, the dollar strengthened. The U.S. gold drain slowed, and we all glimpsed something of the true power of the instrument we had wrought. After 18 minutes, Telstar dipped below the eastern horizon, and the link snapped.
Watch that. It looks like it went very well. We had a report from Brussels that the picture came in clear there.
It was all so primitive. Chet Hundley and I had to wait until Polaroid snapshots came back to us by wire, before we knew how our signal had looked.
I was watching the Unifax machine. Let's see if we can get a little of this off. Kennedy's picture is just coming in now.
This is a Polaroid camera shot of an ordinary television receiver in Brussels.
That's right.
Well, that's the end of the first phase of the exchange of programs between the television networks of the United States and Canada and the European Broadcasting Union.
Telstar would pass over the Atlantic many times over the next 3 years. But it was not always easy to synchronize those 18-minute windows with scheduled newscasts. The last full-scale European story to be covered by jet airplane links was Winston Churchill's funeral in January 1965. Then 3 months later, a satellite called Early Bird went into what is called a synchronous orbit. Rather than orbiting the Earth, it hung in one place in space, in this case over the Atlantic. Thus, it provided a continuous communications link. CBS rushed to take advantage of it with a live series called Town Meeting of the World. I hosted the first one on the 20th anniversary of VE Day. The event was an opportunity to bring together two great World War II commanders in a live transatlantic remembrance: Field Marshal Montgomery and General Eisenhower. It took some persuading to convince General Eisenhower. He was now a paid consultant to CBS News, but he found Field Marshal Montgomery every bit as insufferable as he had during the war. As soon as we were all cut through, a very jovial Montgomery greeted Eisenhower with great glee, calling him my old dear friend and comrade in arms. Ike apparently recalled their relationship in somewhat different terms. He shook his head, turned to me, and muttered a few mild expletives, definitely not intended for Monty's ear. Such august global exchanges by satellite have long since lost their special sense of occasion and ceremony. They are a daily routine now, as satellites take us to places we didn't know existed. 40 years ago today, we knew we were christening a technology that would change the world. 40 years later, it still is. For NPR News, this is Walter Cronkite, 22,000 miles out in space, via Galaxy 4, Transponder 3.